Then I saw in the right hand of him, who was seated on the throne, a scroll written within and on the back, sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals?" And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look into it. And I began to weep loudly because no one was found worthy to open the scroll or to look into it. And one of the elders said to me, "Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered, so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." And between the throne and the four living creatures and among the elders, I saw a lamb standing, as though it had been slain, with seven horns and with seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God, sent out into all the earth. And he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, "Worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God, from every tribe and language and people and nation, and you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth." Then I looked, and I heard around the throne and the living creatures and the elders the voice of many angels, numbering myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honour and glory and blessing." And I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them saying, "To him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honour and glory and might for ever and ever." And the four living creatures said, "Amen." And the elders fell down and worshipped.
The past decade has seen a huge rise in the popularity of astrology once again. That's looking at your star sign. The idea that your star sign and reading your horoscope gives you some advice and guidance with how to make decisions in your life to most positively affect those outcomes and ultimately to consider your future. People use star signs in how they choose a partner. They think they have compatibility lists that tell them whether or not they're suited to being with someone else and may make a decision about a relationship based on that. And when we think about it, it makes a lot of sense that it's become more popular over the past recent years. And we've seen another spike in it happening this year. And I think it's obvious to all of us why that might be happening. People are more than ever interested in knowing what the future holds, in finding ways of controlling or at least understanding what's going to happen in the future. And we'll reach out and try and find different tools and helpful things that will allow us to do that. Well, I think it's fair to say that the seven churches that Jesus is writing to have so much reason to be looking to the future for their hope, yearning for what is to come. We've seen them face persecution, falling into sin in their weakness, suffering in the face of the empire that is currently ruling over them. Now, they knew that Jesus had told his disciples that they would face persecution, but they also knew that Jesus had said that he would return, that the kingdom would come, and as the letters have said so far, that those who conquer would ultimately be with him. Now, I think we've seen a lot of similarities between ourselves and these seven churches. I think in a lot of ways, we can say that they have it worse. Yet we've been able to connect with what they're going through. We've been able to connect with their feelings and their emotions, struggling with sin, yearning for the return of Christ. And so as they toil, as they face the world, they do so in the knowledge of what is to come. But you can still imagine the pain, the impatience, the desire for it to come about soon. John, our visionary, he gets this too. and he feels it in his experiences. Today we're continuing to look at John as he finds himself in the throne room of God in a vision. As Ed explained last week when we looked at Revelation 4, we see him in the throne room with God. We see God's people in incredible worship of him. We see the fullness of his creation surrounding him with the four incredible beasts and the 24 elders worshiping him as God's people. We saw that we were made for majesty, and what we're seeing here is truly majestic, that he on the throne is the only one worthy of praise, the only one worthy of glory. God alone is to be worshipped, and this rich imagery is really a marvel in itself as we look at our passage. But at this point today, in Revelation 5, John, he looks and he sees something in the right hand of the one on the throne. In the place of power, in the position of authority, John sees a scroll. A scroll with writing written on both sides, symbolizing the extent of its contents, with seven seals showing how it's fully and completely sealed until the time comes. And when he sees this, he thinks, Ezekiel, the scroll given to him in Ezekiel 2 and 3 with writing on both sides of lament for him to prophesy to Israel that tasted of sweet honey. He thinks of the scroll of Isaiah 29 calling for true faith and a warning for those who don't, and seeing that that has been sealed just like this one. He thinks Daniel, the scroll given to him in Daniel 12 that has the names of those who will shine like stars in the sky in the end times written on it, and that Daniel was given and told to seal until the time comes. Now, these images, they're not something we're meant to just take and copy and paste into what's going on here, but they inform the type of thing that John is dealing with today. These images, they fill him with the emotions of their experiences, the emotions of Scripture, with understanding of what is going on before him. This scroll is important. This scroll contains the plans, the understanding, the future, the interpretation of the present, the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. This scroll is what the seven churches, what us, well, it's what we're waiting for. This scroll isn't just another scroll. No, this scroll is the scroll. This holds the truth of what is to come, of understanding the suffering that they face. It holds the key to release, to freedom, to the final coming of the promises. We're meant to look at this image and see our future, see our salvation, our eternity with God in his kingdom, but also the opportunity to understand the present and ultimately to see our freedom in the final promises which are to come, our destiny. This is an important scroll for John, for the seven churches, and for us. And the only way to really know the specifics of what's going to go on in this scroll is to open it. A mighty angel steps up and proclaims, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to break its seals?" Now, at this point, you can imagine the seven churches kind of leaning forwards in anticipation as they're reading this. This is the moment that they've been waiting for. John looked around. It's the moment. And there's no one. No one worthy to open the scroll, not in heaven or earth or under the earth. No one worthy to open this scroll. And it's overwhelming to get to this point, to be so close, and then for there to be no one worthy. I think we can understand with all the images that are going on, with all that John is experiencing, that it overcomes him and he breaks down and he weeps. And weeps and weeps as one completely helpless to open the scroll. Now, it may surprise some of you, but it certainly wouldn't surprise people that know me back in Australia that I'm a little bit of a crier. I'm someone who emotions can often overcome me and I respond to them by crying. And it's usually to do with images to me that have a lot of meaning. An example of this is weddings. Weddings are like a prime tearjerker for Tom Elms. Like it's just, I have very little control in that situation. I see the meaning and purpose of images that are happening in front of me and I can't control myself. The second big one is newborn babies. I've never really been able to explain this, but for some reason, I think it might be the little hands, but I don't know exactly what it is. But if you give me a newborn baby and things, I'm not going to hold it together for long. And I think it's because I see the kind of beauty of what God is doing in that situation. On my wedding day, one of the most, memorable moments was me struggling to begin my speech as the groom because I was struggling with my emotions on the day. And that had only been exaggerated by the fact that my friend Aaron had brought his newborn baby to my wedding. The images were overwhelming. There were too many things there that I thought were incredible and emotional and important. And John is overwhelmed today. He sees all these images of all this expectation that he has, and his longing for the future and what is to come, of understanding his present. And he just feels overwhelmed with his helplessness. You see, the future, that no matter what we may think, what we may attempt to do by our own influence, it's not under our control. And I don't mean just in this life, but after that. I mean, we're taught in school, aren't we, that we can control our futures if we just work hard enough or if we just behave ourselves. Well, this year, I think a lot of school pupils have discovered that that isn't always the case. It's not just school pupils, workers, small business owners. People have felt the stripping of their hard work from them by something that they never could have really predicted or had control over in the first place. You see, there's a lie that we often believe, that we are told, and it's that we can control our own futures. Now, hard work is important. And it's something that we should do. We should work hard. There are some really good biblical reasons for that. But when it comes to the future, to the end of things, to where we are destined to be when the world fades away, we cannot claim control because we are simply not worthy. We're not worthy on account of our rebellion against the creator of all things because we live our lives seeking to control our own futures because we buy into this lie that we know what is best for us in our future. Here we see the scroll that holds the key to all of this, to our destiny. Yet there is no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth who is worthy to take it. Not even the Apostle John himself. None of the angels. And I think this is something that Christians often say about ourselves, yet we don't necessarily often believe it fully. We forget how utterly reliant we are for our own salvation. That there is nothing, no amount of Bible reading, no amount of prayer, no amount of serving at church, no amount of living a pure lifestyle, no amount of belonging to a church community that makes us any more worthy than anyone else of taking this scroll, of holding our own destiny in our own control. And if you think about it, that must be an incredibly frustrating and emotionally difficult path to take. Spending your life thinking that you are the master of your own destiny, and then things get taken out of your control constantly, that your plans are scuttled by things you didn't know would happen. I've been there. I mean, we've all been there now, haven't we? From the moment Adam and Eve took the fruit and attempted to take control of their own destinies, it's in our nature. Yet here we see finally that we never had full control. We're there with John, utterly helpless, unworthy, desperate to be saved by someone, desperate to find someone who is worthy so that we can follow them. One of the elders interrupts John's little expression session, bringing him some news. "Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered, so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." "You mean the promised king, the leader from the line of Judah, declared to be the lion, like a lion who would reign over all nations for eternity from Genesis 49, who would receive obedience, whose garments would be washed in the blood of grapes? Oh, you mean the Root of David? From the root of Jesse in Isaiah 11, a great king who would liberate his people and rule over them." These are powerful, militaristic images that John would understand that this angel is saying. His people would understand around him what's going on. This messianic warrior who was to come, who would rule with a scepter and defeat his enemies by the sword. And as he sees the throne before him, as John looks at the throne, as he sees the beasts, John would have had no other image in his head than that of Daniel 7, when he looks and sees the Ancient of Days, knowing that from that moment the Son of Man is about to arrive, the great promised king of the Old Testament. That is what John hears from the elder. This moment is one of the pinnacles of expectation, and it is here. But then he turns and he sees. In Revelation and in other apocalyptic texts, we get this type of thing a bit, that the visionary hears something, and then what they hear provides an interpretation for what they see. So John hears the mighty, the powerful, the military leader Messiah who was predicted to come and rule, who is worthy. And then before him, he sees. And between the throne and the four living creatures and among the elders, I saw a lamb standing as though it had been slain, with seven horns and with seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. A lamb, a slain lamb. Yet here it is, standing in the center of the room by the throne. Who is worthy to take the scroll? Verse 7, and he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, because you were slain, and with your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people and nation." Now there's lots that I imagine can be going through John's head at this moment. Tears still wet on his face, but it seems pretty clear to me that there is a Passover connection from Exodus 12. That when the people of Israel sacrificed the lamb and put the blood on their doors in exchange for the safety of their firstborn. But this time, it's not just for Israel that the lamb was slain. No, he has claimed for God by his blood people of every tribe and language and nation. I mean, you only have to take a look around at our church to see that truth in action. The slain lamb, crucified but raised to life, worthy to take the scroll, not because of some great military victory where the enemies of God's people were defeated by the sword. No, the lamb would win an eternally great victory for his people, for those who seek him and turn to him, but it would not come through an earthly understanding of strength and power. No, this is a victory through sacrifice. Through love. That the true strength of the Lion of Judah is seen in the selfless sacrifice of the Son of God for his people. He's not weak. He has seven horns symbolizing the fullness of his power, seven eyes showing the fullness of his wisdom as the spirits are sent forth. And this lamb, well, he's no simple agent of God. We see him worshipped in the center, and the song builds through the rest of the passage until there is a multitude beyond imagination singing in worship to him. Now, throughout Revelation, whenever John tries to worship an angel, he's rebuked for it and told that there is only one person who he should worship, the only person who is worthy of the worship of all creation. And then we see this song, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever. This Lamb, this Jesus, the Son, is God himself. The eternal God, the Son, showed the world what true power, what true glory, what true victory is through humble, sacrificial love for his people. The Lamb, Jesus, is the one worthy to take the scroll in his hands and open it. I mean, I can't get over the beauty of this image, a slain lamb standing, capturing both the slaying of Jesus through the crucifixion and his resurrection to glory in a single image. And this should have an impact on how we as God's people view strength. As much as I'd love it to be all about how much you can bench press, it's not. What we see is that to be strong as Christ is strong, to win victories for him, is to love. It's to love one another and to love the people of this world sacrificially. To be uncompromising in our beliefs, but to love those who would hate us for it. You know, in the first few generations of Christians, God's people were known for their charity, for their care for the sick and their protection of the needy, and for their choice to love those who hate them, even in the face of death. Often going to their deaths proclaiming the love of Christ to those who execute them for their beliefs. And we'll see the martyrs praised in the next chapter. That is the strength of God's kingdom. Sacrificial, selfless, relentless love at all costs. Behold the Lamb, because this is the guy to follow. This is the one who holds the fate of us all in his hands, and he has claimed that on account of his sacrifice on behalf of those who choose to follow him. He was condemned, he was beaten, he was nailed to the cross and slain, but then he rose again. And should the unworthy turn and declare the Lamb, declare Jesus to be the Lord of all, then he is worthy for us and takes our destiny into his hands. We are counted as his people, as those who have conquered, and of whose names, as we saw in the letter to Sardis, will never be blotted out of the book of life. Who walks with the one worthy to take the scroll. The one who will open it and bring about what is to come, and how we should understand our present in the next few chapters. But first, we need to recognize our unworthiness. For lots of us, we need to be reminded of it. And we should follow suit with the multitudes here and worship the Lamb who was slain for the nations alongside he who sits on the throne, because he holds our future. And with him, it is secure. So let us turn to him. Let us trust him with our future. Let us show his sacrificial love, the only true power that there is in this world, to the nations. And know that by the faith, by our faith in the sacrifice of the Lamb, he seals our destiny. So will he be worthy for you?